Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur.
Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 350 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyro, your host, as usual. Today, my guest is Dan Russell. Dan is a marketing expert who owned his own marketing firm and did a lot of workshops to help convey strategies and principles regarding marketing. But what I really liked about his approach was that it's based on neuroscience. He did the hard work of diving into the science behind why things work from a marketing perspective, and then took those findings, scientific findings, and created, you know, principles and approaches to marketing that capitalized on those findings. So you're going to hear him talk about that. He's kind of reduced that all down into a new book with an appropriately named title, Snake Oil, which walks you through the history and the current affairs of the marketing world and provides a lot of lessons that will help you, you know, break some of the notions that we have regarding marketing and how that can cause us to either react inappropriately or not react. So I think it's really an interesting conversation to help us approach marketing from a new perspective. So I'm very happy to share with you this conversation with Dan Russell. Dan Russell, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you very much. I'm excited to be here.
Well, it's a delight to have you with us today, Dan. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Well, I've been in the marketing world for the last 10 years. I started an agency a couple of years out of college and really began to hone my skills in an area called conversion rate optimization, which is a fancy way of saying I help people plug the holes in their sales process. And I was doing that through the field of neuromarketing. So I got really smart around brain science and how our brains work and why we buy and why people do what they do online. And so we started running a lot of experiments with our clients in the digital marketing and even physical marketing world to try and get their performance, you know, a little bit better. And along the way, I built all these, you know, systems and standard operating procedures and different frameworks that my team and I followed. And eventually decided that I didn't want to run an agency anymore. It burned me out. And I was just like, I'm ready for the next thing. I'm ready for a new business model. So I started teaching what we had learned. We hosted workshops called the Marketing Scientist Workshop, starting a couple of years ago at this point, and hosted businesses who wanted to come in and learn exactly how we did what we did. By that point, we had unlocked somewhere around $50 million in revenue for our clients. That's money that they wouldn't have otherwise gotten because we were running all these tests and experiments. And so after I was teaching those frameworks for a long time, I started writing a book. And eventually, as I was brainstorming, you know, how I wanted to talk about this, I didn't want to write a tactical marketing book. I had plenty of those on my shelf already. There's tons of them out there. You know, books that tell you how to become an Instagram superstar or build a funnel or run Facebook ads or whatever. I was more interested in the principles of marketing and why we do what we do as marketers. And if I could create a conversation with businesses that would help them embrace those principles and even have fun with marketing than I would have done my job. And as I was thinking about what that frame for the book would be, I began conducting interviews with some of my past clients, some of my friends and colleagues who run their own businesses. And this common theme started to pop up to me and make itself apparent, which was that nobody trusts marketers. Nobody is totally 100% committed to a marketing agency or a freelancer at any given point. There's always a little, like, you know, shadow of a doubt, you know, in the best case,
yeah,
as to the incentives of the marketer or how much they're charging, or, you know, even whether or not their things are working, whether or not the strategy is working, whether or not they're the right person. So I started digging into this and going back to some of the conversations I had with, you know, my clients as I was running my agency. And I started remembering during my sales calls, hearing from them that they had just been burned by another agency, or they put $30,000 into a project that led nowhere. And all these different stories where they kind of, you know, opened the kimono and revealed this bruised and battered ego when it comes to investing time into marketing. And as I started to think about this, I was realizing that I'm not going to be able to write any sort of book that anybody's going to want to read. Nobody's going to care about my frameworks. Nobody's going to care about anything if they don't have, if they're not engaged in an honest conversation where I open the kimono and I say, hey, here's the ugly side of the industry. Here's how the sausage is made, and everything you need to know that you need to look out for. And once you know that, then you can start having more intelligent conversations with marketing experts. You can go find the right people, you can conduct the right interviews, and you can use your resources more intelligently. So I started that conversation in my book, Snake Oil, and really expounded on the types of, you know, I'll call them bad actors in the industry. You know, ranging from con artists all the way to people who think they know what they're doing, but actually don't. And so as that conversation unfolded in my writing, I started to be able to introduce these more principle-based lessons, like figuring out your message. You know, at the end of the day, if you have a compelling message, like, you know what you do and how to communicate the benefit of what you do to the right people, you don't need to know all the tactical stuff. You can, like, start up an Instagram account or start up, you know, Facebook page, or, you know, put an ad on a billboard. What doesn't matter. And people will respond to that message and you will have done marketing right. All of that stuff, the shiny objects, the topics and the keynote speech at the conferences, and you know, all of those tactics and tools, right, and masterminds and all these things, they commonly focus on the short term, quick win, you know, shiny objects. So I really zoomed out and I started to talk to people about the bigger picture, and that's where I started to get people saying, yeah, I was burned. I have encountered these people. I have been chasing shiny objects nonstop. And once you get to that point, then you can take a breath of fresh air and be like, okay, let's start over. Let's figure out what my message is. Let's go through these principles and build a solid foundation. So that's really what drives me.
Well, that pretty much sounds like every attorney I've ever talked to with respect to marketing. I find it interesting that you said that most people have a distrust of marketers. Well, you combine that with most people have a distrust of attorneys, and you have the blind leading the blind here. Oftentimes, you know,
yeah,
it's the perfect storm for disaster. And in talking with, you know, hundreds of attorneys over the years about this subject, you know, my sense from them is that they think that marketers just throw everything up against the wall as kind of a shotgun approach and hope something sticks. And when it does, if it does, you know, they take credit for it. And if it doesn't, they say, well, there must be something wrong with your message.
Yeah, they shift the blame. Yep.
Yeah. So I think it's fascinating that you take the approach of, as you said, opening the kimono and revealing the principles behind marketing so that the reader, in this case, the attorney, can start to think like a marketer, like a true marketing professional. And, you know, they can evaluate what's being offered to them, or they can do it themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And as soon as you get to that more fundamental understanding of those principles, and they're not complicated, then you can, like I said, breathe more easily and sleep at night and, you know that you're on the right track.
Well, I'm one of those people who is really data driven and process driven. Mm-hmm. So you really had me at the neuroscience of marketing. Tell me a little bit about, you know, some of the experiments, some of the tests that you did, and some of the things that came out of it that you've now incorporated into the principles and policies and procedures that you use and reflect in the book.
Sure. Well, this is, like I mentioned, a field that I stumbled upon a couple years into running my agency called neuromarketing.
Yeah.
And there are a few different sort of verticals inside that subsection of marketing. You know, all the way to conducting MRI scans and, you know, having eye tracking technology and skin conductivity measurement and all this stuff.
So true science, you know, regarding how people respond to marketing messages.
Yeah. Yes. Very, so very hands-on stuff.
Because, you know, a lot of people, we have a scientific approach, which means we tried a whole bunch of things and we whittled it down to the four or five things that we think worked best. That's not really a scientific
approach. There's a little bit of that
approach. I mean, there's some of that, but I like the idea that you really delved into, you know, the hard science of what drives marketing principles.
Yeah. And there's another category inside the neuromarketing area that is all driven by research coming out institutions like, you know, Columbia University and Emory and so on. And they do all sorts of research on really how the brain works. There's all sorts of heuristics and patterns that we exhibit as human beings that are proven by the research that these institutions are doing. And so what I did was I started reading those research reports and translated them into ethical marketing strategies that we'd be able to test. I'll give you an example. So there's a mental effect called the Zeigarnik effect. It basically states that we feel a mental pressure when we have unfinished tasks, and that pressure will remain there, or that sort of psychological weight will remain there until we complete the task. Not only that, but we have a higher recall rate for those unfinished tasks than before they're finished. And then after they're finished, we have a higher likelihood of forgetting them. So I read that report and I said, okay, how can we, you know, leverage this? Well, at the time we had a client that was running an e-commerce store. They were selling wine subscriptions online. Mm-hmm. And they came to us and they said, our checkout page sucks. You know, it's not performing very well. People are dropping off. Can you help us? And I said, yeah, sounds good. So we did a bunch of, you know, auditing and measuring of, you know, where their checkout page is at. And then we started diving into what we could do. And I came across this Zeigarnik effect. And we designed this little animation that we placed on the checkout page where we had little check boxes that appeared that showed that person what they had done up until that point. You added this to your cart, you entered your information, you did this and this and this. And then all those check marks were green and they were checked. And then there was one last checkbox that was yellow and it was unchecked. And that appeared as soon as the checkout page came up. We start the test. That's the only thing that we did to the checkout page. We start the test and the checkout rate doubled just because people felt that pressure that they, you know, had one step left.
Yeah. And that graphic came up the moment they got on the page. So it wasn't like they watched those green check marks get changed to green. It was, you had all these green things that you've already done. You got this one final thing left to do, and that's going to nag you unless you do it, right? That's
right.
That's the effect. You're going to remember that. You're going to remember the 12 steps you did to get here. And just so that's the psychological effect that caused them to, you know, complete the process.
Yeah, there's actually another layered effect on top of that called the endowed progress effect, which states that we have a higher likelihood of achieving a goal if we feel we have a head start. So the fact that they're seeing the fact that you know they're 80% done with the process and there's only one more step to go, there's an even heavier pressure to keep going and to complete that transaction. So these are the types of things that we did on a very tactical level. And you know, over the years, I built up a database of what I call these neurotactics, and they're all in the back of the book, and I outline them and explain them in detail. But a bigger piece of the conversation is, you know, how to decide what you're going to test, right? And that kind of hits on the other side of the yin and yang of marketing, which is the art, right? There's the science, which is you can do the research, you can figure out, you know, what your experiment's going to be, you can measure, do the math, calculate your cost per lead, all these things, right? That's pretty straightforward if you, take a few minutes to understand. But then there's the art side, which is, you know, I have this problem, right? Our checkout page isn't converting, or our landing page for our legal services isn't converting at a high enough rate, and we're sending paid traffic from Google and we're paying too much for our leads. What are we going to do? Well, you're just looking at your landing page and you're thinking, okay, well, there's a million things I could do. I could change the layout of the page. I could add a video. I could take the video out. I could change up photos. I could change the headline, change the typography, the font size, the colors, all this stuff. And you can get overwhelmed thinking about that, right?
Yeah.
So this is where we come back to the messaging conversation and figuring out what you're going to say. One of the first principle that I talk about in the book and what I've taught in my workshops and what I currently teach entrepreneurs is to figure out what your big idea is. And the big idea is just another way of saying what your core message is. And the big idea is sort of like the nucleus of your marketing atom, where all the electrons spinning around the atom are the pieces of content that you're creating. It doesn't matter if it's a billboard or an ad or phone call or a social media post. It doesn't matter. All of that content centers around this one big idea that if you figure out what that is, people will listen to you. And really big companies do this as well. Like Nike has their big idea of just do it. Just do it drives every single piece of marketing that Sony puts out, or not Sony, Nike puts out. The North Face, their big idea is never stop exploring. That phrase drives every single thing that they do in different ways. They tell different stories that have that as the theme. They have different ads that have that as a theme. They just put that phrase on, you know, their website and people connect to it. So if you can figure out what that big idea is for you, then everything falls into place. It becomes so much easier to figure out what you're going to post on social media, what you're going to say on your website, what you're going to send out in your emails, what you're going to say on a billboard or whatever. That's the other side of the science that sometimes people gravitate away from, because the science is tactical and it's tangible, right? There's numbers on the page and you know, you can track everything, but the art is where the real juice comes from. That's where the value.
It's the most difficult part for attorneys to deal with. You know, I hear all the time, well, how do I distinguish myself in a field where everybody's just about the same? We're all practicing, you know, the same type of law, or we're practicing in the same area, and if you combine that, it's the same type of law in the same area. So how do I distinguish myself, and what's the way of coming up with that message that will resonate with the people I'm trying to reach and around which I can build my marketing campaign and approach my branding? That's a really difficult part, the art part.
Yeah. One thing that I'll volunteer is to rely on storytelling. A lot of people will think about, you know, legal services and not think about the stories behind the legal services. For example, you know, if I'm looking for an attorney to, you know, solve, you know, a legal problem, of any sort, doesn't really matter. I'm going to be searching for, you know, XYZ attorney near me. Right. Typically. That's how most people start, or it's a referral, right? However, once I do that, a bunch of things will pop up. Like, the, you know, in my town, there may be, you know, 7 tax attorneys. You know, if I search, I live in Vero Beach, Florida. So if I search Vero Beach tax attorney, then I'll have 7 different companies that pop up, probably more. So what happens at the moment that those results pop up? I'm looking at the names of the firms, and I'm looking at the little previews in the of their website, and maybe I'll open up a couple of those websites. And at that moment, that's when the storytelling needs to take place. If I have 2 websites open, and website A says, "Hi, I'm a tax attorney in Vero Beach. You should come work with me." And I have all of, you know, these results, right? Maybe they're smart and they put some testimonials, they put some you know, case wins, they've got some, you know, social proof on there. Then website B says, "Hey, I know that you're probably running a business that's coming up to tax season and you've got a really complicated situation. We specialize in LLCs that have, you know, subsidiaries and so on. And Susie was our client last year and saved X amount of dollars," and so on and so forth. You start that conversation that lands with me, that causes me to say, "Yeah, I'm like Susie," or "Yeah, I'm in that exact situation right now." So if you can paint a picture for these people, and that story centers around your big idea, by the way, that story, and story comes in many different forms, but that story can grab a person and talk to them like a human being and say, "Listen, I get where you're at. I understand." And especially in the case of legal services, there are some people that are in real trouble or they're really worried. Right, there's a high level of emotional valence or intensity that they're experiencing. So the more that you can meet them where they are and say, "Listen, I've got you. I got you covered."
Yeah, the more you can identify
what
their problem is and illustrate how you can provide a solution. You know, that's the way you connect with a potential client. You know, when I did this kind of analysis on my own firm, and I knew that, you know, I will freely share that there's a lot of other attorneys in the area that are better, smarter than I am. So I had to figure out a way to distinguish myself. And I looked at what I wanted to do, what kinds of things resonated with me. And without boring you with the story, I came upon the phrase, "I do estate plans for regular folks like you and me." I just thought it was catchy, right? I didn't realize how much that was going to resonate with people and how that began to drive everything I do. And now, mm-hmm. like on my videos, I start off with that phrase. So I think that, you know, kind of what you're alluding to, that's the art part. Now, I will freely admit that I was lucky. You know, I just kind of stumbled upon that.
Yeah, but you had a creative insight.
Yeah.
That happens.
Yeah. And I guess the place where I was, you know, kind of smart about it was I listened to myself.
Yeah.
And didn't say, "Yeah, well, that's stupid," and throw it out. So, but I like your suggestion to start with storytelling. And you may find that big idea in the stories that you tell.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And you can go back to past clients, have conversations with them about their stories, dive deeper into how they were feeling, you know, and you might know that just from the conversations, but maybe not.
Yeah,
I've always taught a practice called the big idea brainstorm. And it's very simple. You sit down at your desk, shut off all of your electronics, put a stack of blank paper in front of you and start writing down ways to describe what you do. And there are different prompts that I've provided. Like, imagine you're sitting across a campfire with your best friend talking about your industry. What's the one thing they're going to tell you that they just hate about your industry?
Mm-hmm.
And talk about that. And talk about how you avoid that or fix it or alleviate that pain. Or, you know, something completely out of left field. You know, imagine your product or service in this case is a cartoon character. You know, what cartoon character would it be and why? It might sound silly, but when you sit down in a quiet room and you start writing these ideas down, the creative juices start flowing. And the first 50 ideas might just suck. And they probably will suck. Like that happens to me too. I sit down and I write down, you know, my first 25, 50 ideas and they're not good, right? And I throw them away, just litter the floor with bad ideas. And eventually you're going to get to the point where you're getting closer and closer and closer. And then you write something down and it causes like the hair on the back of your neck to stand up. And that's your big idea. Yeah, you have to just, you have to like face that failure after failure to get to that goal because it is there, but you have to just like endure that creative process, the pain of that creative process in order to get to that goal.
If you've been a listener of this podcast for any time, you know that I sing the praises of Ruby all the time because they're really responsible in my own practice for helping me grow my business, deliver personalized experience to my clients, you know, building customer loyalty, really, in terms of having a consistent front-facing office partner in Ruby, and allows me to stay connected anywhere, anytime to my business through their services. So I can't say enough about Ruby. I'm delighted to have them and continue to have them as a sponsor of this podcast. As a law firm owner, you take responsibility for driving more revenue for your firm. But how much of that revenue ends up as bottom line profit? Ryan Himmler, the net profit CFO, helps law firms drive more top line revenue to bottom line profit. His two game changing tools are the scorecard, so you can actually know what your numbers are and can make informed decisions, and the action plan, so you know how to get your numbers where you want them to be and drive more net profit. To learn more about Ryan, check out episode 306 of The Law Entrepreneur, and you can get a free profit acceleration call by going to go.oncehub, that's O-N-C-E-H-U-B, go.oncehub.com/profit. I will also tell you, just as an aside, I am a client of Ryan's. I've been working with him for the past 6 months. Frankly, ever since he did that episode with me, I signed on with him to be a client. And I've been thrilled with the kind of information and insight he's been able to give me. So do yourself a favor, you know, get that free call and check out Ryan Kimmler at netprofit.com. The marketing concept that most attorneys are begrudgingly becoming aware of is the concept of the funnel, right? Mm-hmm. Number of leads at the top of the funnel and the process they go through until at the bottom of the funnel, you have a client who has engaged you. In your research, did you come across data having to do with the neuroscience of the client's journey through that marketing funnel?
Well, sure. The funnel is a very popular format for lead generation and sales in the digital marketing world. And you can actually, there are real world applications like in brick and mortar stores where you could apply the funnel methodology. But in many cases, it's a digital marketing, you know,
sure,
sort of a framework. You can look at any landing page for any company that you search for on Google. And if they are, unless they are an e-commerce company, in which case there's a shopping cart, then they're going to probably try to turn you into a lead before they try to sell you. It's a very popular framework these days, and it works because it establishes credibility prior to the request for either money or time. And there's plenty of research out there that, you know, establishes that these things work. I mean, I've built hundreds of funnels over the past 10 years, and they definitely, I can tell you, they definitely work. They definitely generate leads. They definitely make money. The question, though, is what are you providing on your top of funnel landing page that establishes that credibility, that provides that goodwill to people, value in advance, in a way that's relevant to your offer and what they're looking for, what they're trying to alleviate. So if you're offering estate planning services, for example, your landing page may give them a free download for an estate planning spreadsheet or a workbook to get started with their planning, or three-part video series that introduces estate planning for people who have no idea how this area of the law works. All of those are examples of what's commonly called a lead magnet.
Yep.
You can call it whatever you want, free download, whatever, that they receive in exchange for their contact information. And once you have their contact information, then you can call them, you can email them, you can get in touch with them and start building that relationship. Whether that's immediate, where you call them and you have a phone call right there, or whether that takes a couple of days or even a couple of weeks to nurture the relationship and provide even more value to the point that they trust you enough to move forward and into the next step of the funnel.
Yeah. And I think what happens with most of us attorneys, we get started on that process, but we get distracted and we don't consistently apply the process. So how important is it to create, a well-oiled machine that takes maybe you out of the equation and continues to allow you to operate a marketing system that can see the client through the end of the process?
Well, I think it's pretty important. I mean, if you want to take any vacations or, turn off your phone, or, trust that things are running smoothly in the background while you're away, then you need to have a system like that. I call that the marketing operating system. It's a series of three different components. One is your customers knowing exactly who you are selling to and providing services to, what problems they're facing, their demographics, their psychographics, all that stuff. Then you have your campaigns. And these campaigns are collections of content that are shared through different channels, like, a blog or Facebook ads or Google ads or, a billboard. And the purpose of those campaigns is to capture the attention of those customers. That's the whole objective of a marketing campaign. It's not to make sales. The mistake that a lot of people make is they're trying to lump in conversions into a campaign that's really supposed to just capture somebody's attention. That is the hardest part of marketing. And that's why you need to have a good message, a good big idea. So you have your campaigns that are built to capture that attention. And the third component is your conversions. That has to do with how well your funnel is designed or how well your follow-up systems are configured so that you can convert that attention into a sale or a lead. So if you have those three components of a marketing operating system running, then you can do whatever you want and really not think about marketing too much. I provide a series of meeting cadences and meeting agendas as part of that operating system that I've used over the years, and it works quite well. Right? You have a certain type of meeting every week, another type of meeting every month, and another type of meeting every quarter. And you have that cadence and you know that everything is scheduled and everything is following a certain tempo, and you know what your numbers need to look like, and you know what your big idea is, and you know what your campaigns are and what you're saying across which channels, and even like how you're testing that. That's the system.
Yeah. And I know for a lot of us, it's getting it into the challenge. Sometimes we have piece of it here, piece of it there. We're kind of struggling to make it all hang together. Then we get distracted and by doing other real work or hiring, people for the office, and it get left to being unattended to. And we need that jump start sometimes. We need that way to, okay, let's get back in here and connect these pieces and figure this out. And a lot of times that doesn't happen. And so you hear people say, well, I did a bunch of stuff. It didn't work. And I finally just gave up and I'm just dealing with what I could deal with,
Yep. To that, I would say not start over, because you don't want to start over.
Yeah.
But simplify and measure. If you can pare down your marketing process and call it your funnel, call it your lead generation system, whatever. Pare down whatever it is that you do to get leads into your practice to as few steps as possible. Then, meaning like remove complicated email follow-up systems, remove all the bells and whistles that you may have added over the years, and it just turns into this Frankenstein monster. Like, just get rid of the noise and have as simple of a system as possible to generate leads, right? And just focus on the lead gen first. Don't worry about the sales, because you know most people here probably have more of a lead generation problem than a sales problem. If you have a sales problem, that's a separate conversation that we can dive into. But if you're just talking about leads, just focus on the bare minimum number of steps that need to happen to generate lead. Then measure the conversions at each step along that process. So I think a very simple example would be, I'm, you know, Dan, a licensed attorney in Florida, and I'm running my practice out of Vero Beach, and I'm running Google ads. I'm paying $1,000 a month for traffic that goes to a landing page on my website that has a simple form. And I've spent, you know, a lot of time writing it, and it's very carefully, you know,
crafted,
planned and formatted and so on. And it goes to a confirmation page that says, thank you, I will be in touch with you shortly. So literally two pages in an ad. I can measure the conversion rate from the ad to the first page based on the click-through rate of the ad campaign. And I can measure the conversion rate of the traffic from the landing page to the confirmation page. Those are two numbers, right? From that, I can have my cost per lead. I know how much I'm paying for my leads, and I can do all sorts of other things. But those two numbers are your sole focus, basically, in figuring out how much you're paying for leads and how many leads you're getting. And if you can look at those two numbers and say, I'm happy or I'm not happy with this number or both numbers, then you know what to work on. Let's say that you're paying too much for leads. Okay, well, there are two ways that you can fix that. You can improve the conversion rate of your landing page and get more leads with the existing traffic that you're getting, or you can start improving the ad campaign to lower your cost per click. So this is just the sequence of events that you can go through in a very simple funnel to isolate the problem, diagnose the problem that you have based on a particular goal. Like, I want to get 500 leads a month. Okay, well, then you need to hit $2 per click, or $2 per lead, rather. Right, $1,000 a month, 500 leads.
Yep.
$2 a lead, that's pretty good. So anyway, that's what I would do. I'd simplify and measure, and then you can add things on and get as complicated as you want, as long as you're hitting your numbers. That's the most important.
Yeah, and it doesn't always have to also, you know, be the ad driving to a landing page to a confirmation page. So for a lot of attorneys, the journey starts when somebody simply has an issue that, and they, you know, Google, as you said earlier, attorneys near me who do this thing, and you know, the potential customer, their first interaction is hitting your website.
Right.
And so now you can start talking about, I didn't necessarily pay for that per se, but now they're on my website. What do they do once they're on my website? How does my website perform? And again, you, to your point, you then want to whittle it down to what are the actions that I can measure once they arrive?
So one big mistake that a lot of people make, not even in the professional services world, but in the greater business world, is treating their homepage of their website differently than they would a landing page. Your website is there to generate leads.
Yeah, couldn't agree with you more.
So when you have somebody land on your website from, it sounded like this was an organic traffic.
Like an organic search, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If somebody lands on your website, then they should be as quickly as possible, in the same way they would with a landing page, pointed to some sort of conversion action. Usually that's filling out a form. Sometimes it's making a phone call. And you should be able to measure those phone calls and measure those form submissions on your homepage. There should be a form on your homepage, right? It's the same principle, right? That's where, you know, we're, you know, this is a perfect example of how you can sort of like get into this, you know, all these branches of possibilities, you know, grows in front of your eyes. Like, oh my God, my website, it's way more complicated than my landing page. You know, I have all these sub pages and I've got blog posts and all these things, but it's actually not. if you look at your homepage and think, okay, this sucker's job is to give me contact information of people who are visiting the homepage, and design that homepage in a way that establishes an emotional connection, provides a solution, and gets somebody to fill out a form, then you're well on your way. You're treating it in the same way that you would a landing page. Same thing goes for blog posts, by the way, and subpages on your website. There should always be some form of call to action on every single page, that it's at the exact moment that somebody decides, I trust this person enough to have a conversation with them, there should be a button to click.
That's
the whole philosophy.
That is such an important point. You know, we had a guy on the program a while ago who said, your websites are dead. You know, you should think of landing pages. And I think the point he was trying to make was one similar to yours, is that every page on your website should act as a landing page. You should be looking to capture the visitor's information, if they're so moved by the content of that page, right there on that page. You don't want them to have to go somewhere else.
Yep.
And you want to capture it there. And I don't think we do that enough. And it's something that's kind of thinking of it in a little different way, you know, because otherwise,
right. But it's coming from that same basic principle based thinking. You know?
It is, because otherwise it's just, you know, an electronic brochure.
Yeah.
That somebody's like, leafing through and then throwing it, you know, yeah, I'll get to that later.
It's your front door, right? Every retail location has a front door for people to walk through. If your website doesn't have a form, you don't have a front door.
Yeah. So the book is called Snake Oil. It's available everywhere.
It is. Yes. Yeah. Yep.
Tell me a little bit about some of the workshops that you do. What do you do in your workshops, and how often do you run those, and where do you have them, and how do I connect with those?
So I don't host those anymore, unfortunately.
Oh, okay.
Those were that was called the Marketing Scientist Workshop. I was running those to really, as I mentioned, teach those principles, okay, teach this sort of principle-based thinking, the scientific method as it relates to marketing, you know, a lot of other tools that I outline in the book. So I started to spend a lot of time a couple years ago helping out startups go to market. So I'm a partner at a tech incubator called Project 10K. So I started to really put my time into that. So I don't do the workshops anymore.
Okay. My apologies.
But that's what it was all focused on, was like the science side. And I eventually added in the art side to it as well.
Well, I love the title of the book. I love it. You know, the idea that getting inside the minds of a professional marketer who's based on neuroscience. I mean, I love that approach. And so I would suggest that our listeners take an opportunity to check it out on Amazon or wherever you buy your books, a hard copy. If you're still doing that, called Snake Oil by Dan Russell. And Dan, if our listeners have any questions they may want to offer up, is there a way for them to connect with you?
Yeah. I'm on Twitter and Instagram, and my username is Hey Dan Russell. Russell is two S's, two L's, and I'm on LinkedIn as well. If you just type in my name, same username.
All right. Well,
we'd love to answer questions. I'm always here to help, and I have a huge passion for small businesses and startups. So please reach out if you guys need any support.
Great. Well, give Dan a follow on Twitter and Instagram and all those things. And I can't thank you enough for taking the time to be with us today on The Law Entrepreneur.
Well, there you have it, boys and girls, another episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors for this episode, our good friends at Ruby. I can't say enough about Ruby. As you know, they've been my virtual receptionist for years now. Couldn't be happier with them, and I really urge all of you, if you need a virtual receptionist, that you give Ruby a chance. Also, Net Profit CFO, as I've mentioned before, Ryan Kimler was a guest on the program some time ago. I liked what he had to say so much, I became a client. And then after I became a client, he became a sponsor. So very happy about that arrangement. If you want to take your understanding of your financials in your law firm to that next step beyond just what your bookkeeper gives you back, give Ryan a call at Net Profit CFO. I don't think you'll be disappointed. If you enjoyed this podcast, do me the great favor of leaving a positive rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. It really helps with the opportunity for us to get in front of other people. And until next week, I wish you all the best, and we'll see you again here on Law Entrepreneur.